if anyone is having scheduling problems or needs to come from some distance, let us know, let council know, and we can try to accommodate your schedule. Otherwise, we'll open this, I think we have, let's see, Kent Ritter, are you on 2078?
Yes, sir.
Is that right? Would you come up, please?
Do you have my testimony?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, I am Captain John R. Ritter, Department of State Police, Director, Bureau of Criminal Identification. House Bill 2078 amends ORS 181.066 by requiring the Department of State Police to provide latent print identification services to all criminal justice agencies for major crimes against persons. Currently, the Department provides latent print identification services to other criminal justice agencies, as well as providing those services to state police investigations. However, local police agencies and sheriffs are concerned that unless the law requires that these services be provided to all criminal justice agencies, in the future, some of the latent print identification services provided to criminal justice agencies could be withdrawn. The amended law would ensure that, regardless of budgetary constraints, all criminal justice agencies shall be treated alike in their eligibility to receive latent print identification service. Mr. Chairman, this concludes my testimony. If you or the any members have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Captain Ritter. Are there questions by the committee? Representative Sprayer.
Captain, could you maybe give us some background information in terms of how many people you have within your agency who perform this work, maybe some ballpark idea of how many requests a year you process, and if you anticipate any budget impact? My sense is this is just says you'll do what you're already doing, but can you help me out a little bit there?
Yes, sir. Mr. Representative Springer, presently we have 5 latent print examiners serving the complete state. As far as how many cases we receive in a year's time, that fluctuates quite a bit. During the year of 1984, we became so burdened with a backlog of over 1,000 cases representing about a year's work behind that we had to invoke some restrictions, cutbacks in services. In fact, we had 3 cutbacks in services, which really crippled law enforcement, state police, as well as sheriffs and chiefs, more so sheriffs and chiefs. We eliminated that backlog down to about 2 weeks response time at the end of 1985. And when the new superintendent took over in January 1986, we relaxed some of those restrictions, started providing full service to all criminal justice agencies that did not have latent print service within their own department. This has worked out well for a while. Now we're up to about a 4-month backlog already. Now, as far as positions are concerned, we have 3 positions in the governor's recommended budget.
3 additional positions.
3 additional positions. And those positions, if we acquired them, would be assigned out into the field. It would not be based at Salem. Presently, all 5 are based at Salem.
Well, yeah, I had a chance to meet with the superintendent last week and also with, I believe, Major Roger Dintman?
Digman.
Digman, who I guess is responsible for the criminal lab work.
Crime lab, yes.
Yeah. Do these folks, criminal identification, are they part of the crime lab, or do they work with the crime lab people?
This is a separate division. Yes, we work very closely with the crime lab.
Do you have people stationed, say, up in Portland out of the crime lab who work exclusively in fingerprint work, or is that here in the home office?
No, sir. That's our problem right now. We have nobody in the field.
Do you hope to assign one or more of those three new positions to field work?
All three.
All three. And do you know where they're going to be assigned in the field yet? Or?
Well, I have to set our priorities, and my priority right now would be to kill the travel time and the expenses and lodging and so forth. And right now, Southern Oregon is a crippler to our service. One would have to go to Medford. Eastern Oregon is very costly, time-consuming. One would have to go to Pendleton or Baker. And I would assume the third one would go to the Portland metro area.
Okay. How many other law enforcement agencies are big enough or sophisticated enough to kind of have their own in-house capability? I mean, I'm guessing maybe the Portland police do that, maybe some of the larger sheriff's offices. Do you know offhand how many local law enforcement people have their own fingerprint, you know, analysis capability?
Representative Springer, to give you a number, I just have to sort of mentally count right now. Yes, Portland does their own. Sheriff's Office, Washington County, Sheriff's Office, Clackamas County just started one up. And I'm sure that you'll hear testimony here where Sheriff Brook was not in favor of doing that. He was forced into it because of our restrictions. Salem PD does some. Sheriff's Office, Roseburg. Mm-hmm. Right off the top of my head, that's all I know.
Okay. Just my last question. My sense is that to the extent that you folks provide this service to local law enforcement agencies, though we may not want to call it this, I mean, in effect, the state is helping to subsidize, to some degree, local crime enforcement, investigation work through these services. Is that a fair statement of your responsibility, basically?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
This is a little far afield in the question, but I've heard some proposals about a computerized print system. It's got an acronym of FIPS or something like
that. AFIS.
AFIS, okay. Which they're using in other states, and apparently is something like a $4 million price tag on it that hopefully we can get implemented. I'm interested in trying to pursue that through this session, but this is... would that type of a system, do you feel that your work would be enhanced by that, or is that not related to this sort of thing?
It's very much related, and it would cause an increase in our workload. It would be handled more sophisticated, more efficient, speedy operation. This is not a machine that you take out to the field and do the field work. It was in our budget request. It was appealed to the transition committee, and it dropped from there.
Chase it down. This one last question, and that is the major crimes against persons is... broadly read as AB felons, the U felons. What is that? Where do you sort of draw the line as to? Is that just something you accommodate with local jurisdictions? And if there's a stack up as to how you prioritize those, or is there some fairly defined lines of how you?
Representative Burton, rape, robbery, murder,
class of crime, and it's really
class of crime. We never close the door on that either. We leave it at the discretion of the director. That if we have a series of burglaries or some town that's just being ripped to pieces, we'll certainly help them out.
Okay. Further questions? Ernie Kemper, thank you very much. Oh, Representative Springer.
Yeah, I just wanted to maybe follow up on that a bit. I just want to make sure that we all are pretty clear just what major crimes against persons, if that's the definition that we really want to go with. I don't know if we need to be more specific or if, you know, there could be a major crime that wouldn't necessarily be against a person. So you got a big problem with arson. I mean, that's, we think of that potentially is an impacted persons, of course, could be the victim of arson, but it's also thought of as a property crime as well. I guess my question might be to counsel, just if we need to, working with the captain here, see if we need to expand a little bit further on that definition. It's a little open-ended, because I don't know what major crimes means, if it's just felonies or if it might be broader than that, and I guess we really want it to mean what you want it to mean, but it's not real clear to me just where we're at yet.
As I said before, the superintendent's left the option to me to take on any crime. Want to keep it to, you know,
sure,
major crimes against persons, whatever that may be.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll just ask our counsel maybe to explore that a little bit further and check back with you, and maybe we can find some language that'll be a little more precise and yet not constrictive in terms of allowing you the discretion you want to have.
The purpose of putting in there for major crimes against persons, if we were fortunate enough to get these three positions and put them out to the field, we wanted to keep this restriction in there for the first 2 years they were out in the field, assuming that we could get more positions at the next session. This would be lifted and be all crimes. That's the reasoning behind it.
Appreciate that background. That's helpful. Thank you,
Representative Phillips. You have a question.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, couldn't you define it as serious crimes, and as you go out to the community, you could let them know what level that gives you a little more flexibility in definition.
Yes, I feel all crimes are serious, so what do you call serious? You
know? Well, I guess that's my point. You could call it a serious crime, and then when you go out and working with these people, you could define it. If you define it in statute, either real restrictive or real broad, you could cause yourself more trouble than you really want.
Well, I would assume that since you have had the historical experience with this, that you don't need to, we may not need to do that, but we check, and I think for my concern would be, and it was on the question against persons, and whether or not that would restrict you in some way into looking at arson or major white-collar computer types of, like I said, ultimately may or may not fall in that category, but I trust your historical sense of these things, but we'll check into it for you.
Fine.
If there are no further questions, we'll... Does anyone else wish to be heard on this bill? We have some further testimony. So thank you, Captain Murray.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Glenn Shipman. I'm the sheriff of Yamhill County, McMinnville. I'm also the president of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association this year. And Bob and I are here to go on record to support the state police in this bill. It would be a plus to us. And as you mentioned before, other agencies, sheriff's agencies, city agencies, have had fingerprint bureaus, and they have closed them out because the state can do so much better and so much quicker. And in the case of Sheriff Brooks, he started one, but he really doesn't want to, and if this could be passed, it would save a lot of duplication.
Yes, I'm Bob Thomas, Chief of Police for the City of Kaiser. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Chiefs of Police and also in support of this bill. As Sheriff Shipman indicated, local law enforcement agencies just do not have the manpower or the expertise to get involved in this type of thing on this high level of service. Periodically, we do need that service, as all cities do. And if we don't have that service, it's very easy to lose cases in court. So again, are here in support of that bill. Hopefully you will consider that.
Let me ask either one of you, have you had any difficulty with a definition in the discussion you heard up here, I think, about the crimes, serious crimes against, major crimes against person? Have you ever experienced a problem in relating to the latent print division on what you send down that they'll review other than the budgetary or
We did some last year when they were short, and it wasn't mandatory that they do this for us, and I can't blame them. Naturally, they took their cases first, and what was left over, they took. And sometimes we waited as far as in months, in terms of months.
So that was more of a staffing concern.
It was their problem with staffing and workload.
You would, I take it, then support the additional positions that...
I would. I would also support it if you can find a few bucks to buy that machine with.
Exactly. And then about that, I got a letter from my own chief of police indicating support for those additional positions in the lab. So I assume that's a position that the State Police Chiefs of Police Association has taken and the Sheriff's Association. Yeah. Are there questions of these gentlemen? Chief, Sheriff, thank you very much for coming down. Appreciate your help. Dale Penn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dale Penn. I represent the Oregon District Attorneys Association. We also support this bill. I think that it's important to point out that local law enforcement agencies are directly involved in reviewing a scene, a crime scene, and taking the latent fingerprints themselves from evidence or from the crime scene. This is a request, and I think it's really something that the state police or in a unified position must do, is provide the expertise and the experience which translates the analysis of those latent fingerprints into expert testimony, which can then be used in a prosecution. They have that experience and expertise, and it's very difficult and time-consuming to try to build that on a local level. It's not something just can be done immediately. They have already developed that, and this is just a request to prioritize that in the law enforcement system. And I think it's commendable the state police are prioritizing it. I can say from my own personal experience that any time just about we do a felony prosecution, if fingerprints have not been attempted to be obtained, or let's say that because of manpower problems, there are prints that are at the scene, but we're unable to have them processed, we've just about foreclosed the possibility of conviction in that case, because the first thing that's going to be brought up by the defense is that there's the mysterious person with the prints, and no one knows whose prints those are. We are attacked always if we don't go through every print that's been seized, and state police have been able to do that in felony investigations, and that's a reason why it's very important we support both the funding and the governor's budget and the Ways and Means proposal for three additional people, but also this bill to prioritize that in the system.
Thank you, Mr. Penn. Are there any questions? Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else that wishes to be heard on House Bill 2078? I think the only question I might have is apparently this, from what was the testimony on this, this is sort of what's going on right now, but I'm wondering if this would have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and if there is a financial impact, or if that's related to the other one, not, we'll schedule it for a work session. Then. And we'll close the hearing on 2078. And open a hearing on House Bill 2158. Stan Mauser Hart.
I'm Dr. Stan Mauser Hart, Chief Psychologist at the Oregon State Hospital and representing the Mental Health Division. I've provided written copy of the testimony from the Mental Health Division. ORS 161735 currently permits the court to either appoint one or more psychiatrists to examine an allegedly dangerous offender or to order the defendant to be taken to a state hospital designated by the Mental Health Division. The Mental Health Division introduced the proposed revisions to RS 161735 for the following reasons. It is not necessary for these examinations to be performed at a state hospital. The determination of dangerousness relies heavily on the individual's history of dangerous and reckless behavior rather than inpatient clinical observation and assessment. None of the 64 defendants admitted to Oregon State Hospital for Dangerous Offender Evaluation since 1984 has had a major mental illness. The efficiency of the examinations would be increased substantially if performed at the local correctional facility. Criminal histories are readily available at local correctional agencies and frequently not available to state hospital staff at the time of the examination. This statutory change would alleviate in a small way the chronic overcrowding of the forensic psychiatric program at the Oregon State Hospital. The potential risk of escape during transportation to and from the hospital and while at the hospital would be reduced. The overall cost to the counties would be reduced by eliminating transportation and related security costs incurred by the Sheriff's Department and by eliminating the daily costs associated with inpatient hospitalization. The Mental Health Division recommends passage of House Bill 2158.
Thank you, Doctor. The 64 defendants, can you just go into a little background about how they got to you and why, perhaps?
The court has ordered those individuals to us for a dangerous offender evaluation, and the counties then transport them to the hospital, where psychiatrists and psychologists' time is spent in evaluating those individuals against the statute. The average length of stay for those folks is 24 hours over the past couple of years.
I guess my question is more, why, since none of these, in your view or in the view of the state hospital, had a major mental illness, how is it that they actually, what was going through the court's mind by referring them? Is this just easier? Is there no court psychiatrist available in some counties?
It'd be hard to say that the court certainly has the authority under current statute to do that, and it would be tough to read the mind as to why the court was intending to do that.
Representative Springer?
Well, this may follow. I sense from your testimony, though you may not have stated it specifically, you folks bill back the counties who transport an individual to you for this examination, or how does that work?
That's what's allowed by statute to do, correct?
Do you folks do that now?
Or? It hasn't been done. Mental Health Division, this has been going on. The Mental Health Division wasn't aware of the fact that the counties weren't getting billed back. And so the hospital has requested of the division a billing procedure, and that's going to be implemented by the end of this month, where we will now bill back the costs. Correct.
Did the Secretary of State's audit mention that to you, or was this something you found internally in your own review? Or
I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't know if the Secretary of State has taken a look at that, or generally they're pretty strict about these billing procedures. Mm-hmm. I guess a follow-up to that, if in fact you begin to initiate this process of billing the counties or the sheriff's departments, do you think that itself will sort of put the counties on notice that this is not a freebie and that that might help your problem independent of anything we do with this bill? Or?
It would have that impact, yes. I would suspect it would.
Follow-up?
Representative Springer.
I've heard a couple horror stories. I guess I'll relate one. I don't know if it's got any value for this bill or not, but I've heard from one of my colleagues down in the valley that their local law enforcement had an individual who was within the custody. I believe this was in the Albany or Linn County area. And they wanted to take that individual into a local hospital, presumably because they were concerned that this person was acting out or presented such a danger that they couldn't safely handle this individual. But none of the local hospitals would accept this individual, probably because the person was indigent. And what happened was that this person basically got dumped on your doorstep in Salem because there were no resources in Linn County that the law enforcement felt comfortable they could seek help. Is that part of your experience? Is that one of the reasons you're here?
That doesn't really, I don't think that would relate to this particular bill. That's for inpatient treatment services from the sound of it. Someone who, while in custody, there's a recognized need for services, treatment services. This is to deal with evaluations of folks who are incarcerated and need evaluations in terms of sentencing, not at all to deal with treatment, in fact. And given that none of the ones we've seen in the past 2 years have even had a major mental illness, which may well have been the case in the example that you cite, and it may well be then appropriate for that person to have been sent to us, not just dumped on the doorstep. But these evaluations are based on basically criminal history and are an attempt to determine whether or not there's a personality disorder that indicates a propensity toward future crime. And that's part of the sentencing process rather than the treatment process.
Unfortunately, I don't have 161725 in front of me, so I don't know if, Council, if you've had a chance to review that or not. But that's fine. Thank you.
I have a copy of it here.
We can probably lay our hands on one. That's okay.
I have a copy here if you'd like
well,
a copy.
Sure. You got it right here. We'll borrow yours from it.
Thanks.
Me, just while we're reviewing that, make sure I understand the people who we're dealing with here, the 64 defendants that were brought to you in 84, since 84, those are as part of the sentencing process.
Correct.
These are all people who are part of the sentencing process.
Right. To determine whether or not those individuals are dangerous offenders.
But they are, in the meantime, actually admitted to the hospital. They go through an admitting procedure?
Correct. When anyone is sent to us for services, we have a process by which they need to be assigned a hospital number and so forth. Now, some are there on an outpatient basis, more or less, whether they're just during the day. Some are required to stay overnight or longer. And therefore, the bill results in inpatient services.
Do you have further questions?
No, this, it wasn't real clear to me initially from your testimony how closely keyed to 161725 this was. Do you happen to know which counties have been sending you the most people? Or
I don't have that data.
Okay. Thanks.
We could certainly get it and provide that to the committee.
That would be helpful if there's not too much difficulty.
No, we can get it back. We can break down the 64 over the past 2 years as to what the county of origin was.
That would be helpful. Okay. Further questions? Representative Bauman?
Just to clarify, I noticed that the bill talks about 161725, and your printed testimony refers to 161735. Is that an error in the...
You're amending 0.735, but it relates back to 7.25, and that was the question here. Probably I'd ask counsel if they would to, for everybody to put in their bill file, maybe you could make us a copy of that particular bill so that we know what that's relating back to. And it's talking about standards for sentencing.
It is 735 that this bill is seeking to amend.
Right. But it relates back to people who fall in the category of 7.5.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Chairman, Representative Miller.
One question of the we've had 64 defendants admitted to the hospital and had no major mental illness. How many folks totally are we talking about that undergo that evaluation? Any idea?
Well, since 1984, there have been 64 total that we've done that evaluation on.
That you've had, are there?
Correct. I don't know how many have been referred within the county itself where services were provided by independent contractors coming to the correctional facility or the inmate being seen elsewhere. I only have numbers on our own evaluations.
I note here that Mr. Penn will be testifying right after the doctor here, and he may have some numbers. But if we don't, we might want to try to check that out.
Yeah, because it looks, if I read the current law, it is optional. They don't need to send them to you.
Correct.
And yet?
And it's just those that are being sent to us that we have concern about in terms of the testimony here. We don't maintain data on the ones that aren't, you know, the ones that are evaluated in the community.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to do, Mr. Chairman, is just get some feeling for whether or not, even though they're 0-64 and sending folks to you, whether or not that represents a very large number of all the folks who are evaluated, and whether or not this is a big deal. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dale Penn. I represent the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I apologize for not having written testimony on this. I didn't realize it was up today, and I heard about it, and I wanted to say something about it. I signed up as being against the bill, but I'm kind of half for and half against, and so there wasn't a maybe there, so I checked against. I don't see any problem.
I wish we had that button.
That's the blue one.
That's the blue one.
I don't have any difficulty with the procedure that the state mental health division is proposing. In fact, that's the procedure that my county has used for this kind of examination for the last 10 years. And Representative Miller is correct that the 64 or 84 in the last